Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph, two lines down. Elamiata. The Gemara says, based on what we saw in the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda yesterday, as to how many of the Sanhedrin Hagidola had to come to deal with this corpse that was there, the case of Egla Rufa, they learned it out of the pasuk Vayatzu Zikeinecha Vishoptecha Umadadu El Harim Asher Sivote Chalal. And the words shoftecha and zekeinecha, which are in plural, are what are the derivation of the drashot of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Gemara says now, if that's the case, v'yatzu shnaim u'medadu shnaim. If you're already going to be darshening the pasuk in that manner, which is zekeinecha and shoftecha, also mean two each, then the verbs v'yatzu in plural and madadu in plural should add an additional two each. And therefore, l'Rabbi Yehuda harikan, Tisha. For Rabbi Yehuda, then you would have a total of 9, 5 plus these additional 4. Rabbi Shimon, Harikan Shiva. Rabbi Shimon, you'll have 3 plus these 4, and you get 7. Mar says, how mi ba'ile? We need those words for another drasha. Tanya, because you have a brayta. V'yatzu, hein v'lo shluchu ehen. That the Sanhedrin Agdola has to they themselves go there, and not their shluchim. They can't send people on their behalf to do these measurements or to deal with the issue of Egla Rufa. Umadudu, and they have to measure it. Shafilu nimtza balil la'ir hayu modudim. Even if the corpse is found within the periphery of the city, they still have to measure it. Shemitzvah lasok b'medida. Because there's a mitzvah to get involved with the measuring itself. So from here, the braita uses the words v'yatsu umadudu. And since they're already used, they're not available to teach us the number of the Sanhedrin Hagdolah that comes to the case of the Egla Arufa. Now, when it's found within the Alila ear, even though it seemingly is obvious that it's the closest to that city, and therefore there's no reason to measure, you have to measure anyway. Why you have to measure, the Braita suggests, is because b'mitzvah lasok b'medida, that there is a mitzvah to measure, despite the fact that it's well known or easily known that this corpse is closest to this city. In addition, it might be a precautionary measure, which is that if people think here, oh, it's obvious that it's closer to this city, then in other cases, they will also make such a hashara, such an estimation. And therefore, we want to prevent that from happening. So we say, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the situation is, we want to measure it. Another reason for insisting on the measurement might be the publicizing of the corpse being there, which might actually draw out other information with regards to this killing. So there's a value in the measurement, irrespective of the knowledge that it's closest to this city. The other possibility is it's just a gzerata katuv, umadudu, that you have to measure no matter what. Or, like we're suggesting over here in the Braita, that it's a mitzvah lasok b'medida, that there's just a mitzvah to measure, irrespective of the information being understood or well known that the corpse here is closest to this city. Gemara now says, Matnitin to lo Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. This Mishnah is not like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, our Mishnah, the Tanya. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov omer, Zikeinecha, Zu, Sanhedrin. Shoftecha, Zemelech, Bekoin Gadol. So the way that Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov thinks that the Egla Rufa works is that you have to have the Sanhedrin Agdola here. We will see how many. He doesn't mention that here. And then a Melech and a Kohen Gadol. The king and the Kohen Gadol also have to be in attendance at this measurement of the corpse to the closest city. Melech Dichtiv. How does he know that Melech is included over here? Dichtiv Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz. You see here that the Melech is associated with Mishpat, or being a Shofet. And the same thing with the Kohen Gadol, Dichtiv. Uvata el HaKohanim HaLevi'im ve'lo HaShofet asher yeh. So we'll come to the Kohanim, the Levi'im, to the Shofet. So there it seems to associate the Shofet with the Kohanim, or the Shofet who sits above the Kohanim and Levim. And who is that? That's the Kohen Gadol. So you see that the word Shofet is also associated with Kohen Gadol. So based on that, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sees a requirement in the word Shoftecha in the plural to include the Melech and the Kohen Gadol, and within Zekeinecha to include the Sanhedrin. Now, Yibailu, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Melech v'Kohen Gadol hu dupalig, he only argues with reference to the king and the Kohen Gadol being included in this party that comes to deal with the corpse that was found. Aval b'Sanhedre, Ikar Rabbi Yehuda, Ikar Rabbi Shimon, Sevirle. But with regards to the number of the Sanhedrin that attend, he holds either like Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon. O Dilma b'Sanhedre, Nami Palik. Or maybe even argues about the number of the Sanhedrin Agdola that have to be there. Ad ika kule Sanhedrin. That he requires that the entire Sanhedrin be there. So it's clear that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is not the author of our Mishnah because of the fact that our Mishnah does not mention Melech or Kohen Gadol. With regards to the Sanhedrin, here the Gemara is trying to clarify if he subscribes to the position of Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda who are found in our Mishnah, or he has a totally different view with regards to the Sanhedrin. So I'm Rabbi Yosef, Tashma, Matzan, Zakan, Mamre, Abe Pagi. So the Zakan Mamre is an individual who has a halachic disagreement with his superiors or with his peers, and they go to the Sanhedrin Agdola in order to adjudicate or clarify what the halacha should be in this case. If the Zakein, after he gets clarification from the Sanhedrin Agdola, goes back to hometown and continues to paskin the way he did before, despite the fact that the Sanhedrin Agdola told him that he was wrong, then he becomes what's called a Zakein Mamre. The Zakein Mamre then is subject to a death penalty because of the integrity of the system. Here's someone who is basically breaking down the system by arguing against the Sanhedrin Agdola, which is the final arbiter of the halacha. Now, it's only true in cases of halachot that have a source in the Torah and an interpretation by the Drabanan that we learn out in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Now, the Zakein Mamre here is an individual now who's going up to the Sanhedrin Agdola in order to query from them about what the halacha should be in these instances. So he found them at Beit Pagi. He found them around Yerushalayim, as Rashi says, Koshu b'toch hekef ha'kitzon Yerushalayim korim Beit Pagi. Rashi says that Beit Pagi refers to anything that's in the perimeter of Yerushalayim, but he did not find them in the Makom HaSanhedrin in Lishka HaKazit by Harabait. V'himra alehen. And then he rebels against them, or he rejects their psak, and he continues to insist that he is right. Yoko tehei hamra'ato hamra'a. You would think that his rejection, his rebellion here, would be considered to be problematic. Tamalomar v'kamta v'alita l'makom. The regards to Zakein Mamre, it says that you go up to the place meaning the place where the Sanhedrin Agdola sits, and you get clarification as to regards to the halacha there. Blameid shamakom goreim. Since it says hamakom, the makom with the hei yidiyah, means only in the place where the Sanhedrin is sitting in their proper location, does that deem this individual to be a Zakein Mamre? So now, here he finds the Sanhedrin. They're not sitting in their supreme court, but rather they are walking around the city or they're together in the city. And so because of that, he gets a psak from them on the run, we'll call it. That's not enough to make him into a Zakein Mamre. The only way he can become a Zakein Mamre is if he goes to the supreme court, to the Sanhedrin Agdola itself, in their location, and then gets a psak that says that he is incorrect, and then goes back to his hometown and continues to reject that position. So now, the Nafa Kama. How many of the Sanhedrin went out and were walking around in Yerushalayim? Ilem Adafik Miktsatan. If you say that a portion of the Sanhedrin was walking around here, Dumahanach Deika Gavai Kabate Svir Lahu. Then how can you say that he is deemed to be a Zakein Mamre if those that are found in the Sanhedrin now say that he is incorrect or wrong? Because you have a whole another group of individuals back in the Supreme Court who might agree with him. And therefore you can't say that he's a Zakein Mamre. Obshita, the Nafa Kulu. The only way this could be true is if the entire Sanhedrin was there. Olamai. Why would you have the entire Sanhedrin out away from the Supreme Court building, wandering around Yerushalayim or going somewhere? E the Devar Arshut. If it's simply that they wanted to take a nice spatzir or they wanted to go out, that there was no particular reason, they just happened not to be in the Supreme Court, is that permitted? Vaktiv. Don't we have the pasuk from Shir HaShirim that says, Sharich Agana Sahar, Al Yechsar HaMazik. The pasuk literally means, your umbilicus or your navel is like a half-shaped moon or like a round goblet. Al Yechsar HaMazik, which wants not for liquor or wants not for the mixed wine, the diluted wine. The Gemara darshins from this, that this refers to the Sanhedrin Agdola, because the umbilicus, or the navel, is the center of the body. And so too, the Sanhedrin Agdola, as Rashi notes over here, is the Tiburo Shel Olam, is the center of the world, both because of where they're located by the Beit HaMikdash in the Lishkat HaKazit, as well as the fact that from them is Yotzei Hora'ah Sakalocha the Kol Israel. And based on that, the Gemara learns out, first of all, how they seat themselves in the Sanhedrin Gdolah, which is in this half moon shaped, which is a way that can ensure that each of the parties or all the parties there can face each other or can see each other. It's actually the way that the modern day Knesset is set up because of this description of the Sanhedrin Gdolah. In addition to that, it says, Ayach Sara Mazik, that you're not allowed to have missing from there the dilution of the wine. Dilution of wine is one part wine, two parts water. And so that means basically one third. And Gemara learns from that that at least one third of the Sanhedrin always has to be there. Or basically a Sanhedrin haktana. Shimnitzrach echad mehem latzeit. If one of the participants or members of the Sanhedrin Gdolah wants to go out, if there are 23 left there, keneged Sanhedrin haktana, yotzeit, then he's allowed to leave. Vim lav, eino yotzeit, then otherwise he's not allowed to leave. So it's clear here that if it's an optional reason that they're leaving, or there's no reason for them to leave, then not all of them could be wandering around the city. El upshit do ledvar mitzvah. The only way you can have the entire Sanhedrin wandering around the city is that they're out there to do a mitzvah. Lamai. What mitzvah is it that they're doing? Lav lemedidat egla. The only mitzvah that we can think about here is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov shita, that the Sanhedrin Agdolah, the entire Sanhedrin Agdolah would have to go out to do the measurement of the egla rufa, which would be a dispensation for them to leave because they're leaving for the purpose of a mitzvah. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And that would solve our problem because now we know that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov must believe that the entire Sanhedrin is going out. So for Rabbi Yosef, from this, Breita shows us that there must be an opinion that thinks the entire Sanhedrin is going out. Otherwise, why else would there be a reason for the entire Sanhedrin to be out there? So Amalei Abayis, who's Talmid Abayis, says back to Rabbi Yosef, lo, maybe not. Dumalo Sifalir Balazarot. Maybe the reason the whole Sanhedrin is over there is because they want to expand the city of Yerushalayim. And in order to expand the city of the Yerushalayim or the Azarot in the Mikdash, you have to have the Sanhedrin Agdolah there. Kediktan. In Mosifim Alair Valazarot, Elabaitin Shel Shivim Ve'achat. The order to expand the perimeters of the city or to make it bigger, I mean, the wall there is of Yerushalayim or that which will be deemed Yerushalayim, you need the Sanhedrin Agdolah of Shivim Ve'achat to be participants in that expansion. Tanya Kavatid Rav Yosef. Despite that retort of Abaye, which shows that there could be another reason for the Sanhedrin to be out there, we have a breita that supports Rav Yosef's understanding here. Matzana Beit Pagi, Vihimra Lehem, Kagon. Why are they out there when he bumps into the Sanhedrin Agdolah in the perimeter of the city? Why is he seen there? Kagon Shiatzul Midat Egla. They went out there to measure for the Egla Rufa, Olo Sif Aleir, or to expand the city of Yerushalayim, Valazarot, or the areas of the Migdash. Yochol Tehei Amrato Hamra'a. You would think possibly there, if they give him a psak and he does not follow it, and then he would be deemed to be a zakein mamre. Tamalomar become tavalita malamej shemakom goreim. You have to go up to the place. You have to go to the location of the Sanhedrin Agdolah. If they're found out outside of that place, they don't have the status of the institution of Sanhedrin Agdolah. So even though they give him a psak, it won't be binding on him because of the fact that they're not found in their proper location. So from here, you see that there is this option that the Sanhedrin is out because they're measuring the Egla Rufa. The only one who we would know would have such an opinion is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Based on that breita, supportive of Yosef's position, we must believe that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov thinks that the entire Sanhedrin must participate, and not just like Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda, whether it's either five or three of the Sanhedrin HaGedolah. The other thing to note here is that it mentions that they went out to measure by Yerushalayim. We'll see on the second half of today's daf that the Gemara here assumes that our Mishnah believes that Yerushalayim is not an area that can be counted or measured towards for Egla Arufa. But there are alternate opinions. There is another opinion, as we'll note over there, that says that Yerushalayim can be included, and therefore there must be according to that opinion. Nimsa Tamun Begal Otalui Beilan. We saw in the Mishnah that there are certain exclusions based on the Psukim for corpses that are found in different positions. Lema Matznitin Rabbi Yehudahi Velo Rabbanan. Let's assume that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda and not the Rabbanan. D'tanya, because we have a pasuk by Shechecha, which is Shachachta Omer Basadeh, that if you forget a pile, a bundle in the field, Prat Litamun, that excludes something that is covered or buried. Divri Rabbi Yehuda. Chomim Armim Basadeh Rabotet Tamun. That Sadeh comes to include that which is buried in the field itself. So what we're assuming now is that our Mishnah that says that the Basadeh from Egla Rufa comes to exclude Tamun must be following the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda and not the Shita of the Chachamim. Because Rabbi Yehuda by Shechecha says that if you've left something in the field, means literally you've left it in the field. So if you left something in the field, then you can't go back to collect it. It becomes part of the matnot aniyim. It's part of the produce that the ani is entitled to go collect. On the other hand, if it was covered somehow, and the reason you forgot it is because you can't see it, because it's buried or it's under something else, Rabbi Yehuda says that's not called shechacha, because you didn't forget it, because you left it there, you forgot it, because you can't see it. And the Torah says, basadeh, it has to be that you left it in the field. Whereas the Chachamim said, basadeh is more inclusive. Basadeh includes anything out in the field, even if it's buried in the field. So that would go against, seemingly, our Mishnah that says, basadeh comes to exclude tamun bagal. Samarava filutei merabonan. Even the rabbonan can be the authors of our Mishnah. Hocha minyane dekra, hota minyane dekra. You have to look at the word in the context that's there. Dichtiv. In our case over here, it says ki matzei halal. It says that when you find a corpse. So normally when it says ki matzei halal, hecha de mishtakach, that means anywhere that the corpse is found, it would be deemed to be necessary to perform an eglarufa over here. Vadama. Then you have this other word which is qualifying and saying, Kimatsay Khalal Ba'adama. So now Ba'adama, Pratla Tamun, comes to tell you that that excludes Tamun because before the Pasuk was all inclusive. So now the word Ba'adama must be a miut over here. Bahata minyane dekra. Over there by Shikha, it's also contextually consistent, which is Ktiyakhtiv. Ki tiktsor ktsircha besadecha vishachachta omer. Shikha dumya de katsir. The forgetting in the field is similar to that which you harvest. Makatsir begalui, av shechacha begalui. Just like when you're harvesting, or the produce that's ready to be harvested is something that is visible to you, so too the shechacha has to be something that's visible to you. So that would have been the pashtut of the pasuk by the case of shechacha. Kotav rachmana basadeh. Then the Torah qualifies it and says it basadeh. Well, if you're coming to tell me that it has to be in the open, that's already known from the psukim. So basadeh as a qualifier here must be doing something else. The scope is already limited by the natural or simple explanation of the pasuk, which is, it is everything that is visible like the katsir. So now when you have the word basadeh there as a qualifier must be to be more expansive rather than to be memayet or limiting. And therefore basadeh is a rabot to tamun, comes to include the tamun. So what the Gemara says is that the Chachamim look at the context. In the context of Egla Rufa, the opening pasuk seems to include everything. So therefore, if you have a qualifier, the qualifier must be a limiting factor. On the other hand, by shechacha, we already have a limitation because of the hekesh between katsir and shechacha. And therefore, the word basadeh over there must be an expansive term or expansive qualifier rather than a limiting qualifier. It says, Rabbi Yehuda, nami tibuklei mishechacha, dumya de katsir. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda over there also have the hekesh between shechacha and katsir to say that the shechacha is something that is visible? Mar says, enochanami, that he does learn that. Velobasadeh lomali. But then, if that's how he learns out that it has to be visible, then what does he do with the word basadeh? Before we thought he used the word basadeh to teach you that in the field and not something that's buried. But now, if he's learning that out from the hekesh between katsir and shechacha, then what does he do with the word basadeh? He by later a boat, shechachat kama, comes to include if he forgets something that is not harvested. Not only if you forget something that's already harvested and bundled already, that is called shechacha, so too if you forget to harvest a portion of the field, if you've already passed it, you can't go back then to harvest it because that is also considered to be shechacha. Rabbanan shechachat kama min aluhu. The Rabbanan who don't have the word basadeh, extraneous, where do they learn out that shechacha of standing produce, standing wheat, is considered to be shechacha? Nafkaluhu michi tiksorik tzircha basadecha. So over there they learn it out from when you're cutting, when you're harvesting in your field. So it sounds like when you're harvesting in the field, there can't be shechacha. So that includes the standing produce. Rabbi Yehuda, mibayile, kerbi yabawam, Rabbi Lazar. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the ki tiksork tzircha besedecha? He uses that for the limud of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Lazar. Damar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Lazar, prat, shetzafu, omrim, letoch sudei chaveiro. That comes to include the gaze where it floats over into his friend's field. Rabbonon, that it could have just said basadeh. What does it mean, sadecha, your field? They learn it out from there. He says that that's not enough of a change in the pasuk or significant enough to deem it a limud, and therefore he doesn't think you can learn it out from sadeh sadecha. So what the case there is a case where the wind carried some of your produce over to your friend's field, and now you forget about it. So what Rashi suggests over here is that the forgetting over there is not because you forgot it. you forgot it because you didn't know it was yours. It's in your friend's field, and therefore you have no idea that it's yours. And so that shechacha is not called shechacha because you didn't forget it. On the other hand, there are others that think that it's gzeirat hakatuv, that even if you knew it was your stuff over there, and then you forgot about it, it would not be considered shechacha, because shechacha is only applicable inside of your field. But because of that, Rabbi Huda learns out that from ki tiksor k'tzir chabesadecha, the Chachamim use that for their limit of shechachat kama, that standing produce can also have shechacha. And the Chachamim learn out the fact that it has to be in your field from the word sadecha, whereas the Rabbi Huda doesn't think that the word sadecha is significant enough, and therefore he doesn't have a drasha from that difference. Vayi Rabbi Yirmiyah. Tzafu omrim l'toch sadehu, mahu. If the omrim flowed into his field, what is the din? Avir sadeh k'sadeh dami, olam k'sadeh dami. Is the airspace of your field considered to be like your field, or is it not? So again, here the word tzafa over here is used a little differently than it was used before. You can see the orach has a different girsa, which is afu. Before, that tzafu was that it floated over. The wind blew it over to your friend's field, and then it was found in your friend's field. Over here, whether it's the wind that moved or however it happened, your produce is not on the ground. It's not in the field itself. So based on the pasuk of shechacha, it seems that you would have to forget it in your field for it to be considered shechacha. Now what the Gemara is querying is, if the item is found in the field, but it's not in the field itself, it's in the airspace of the field, is that considered to be shechacha? So that's the question. Is the airspace of the field like the field or not? Let's learn this out, or the answer to this, from that limud that we just had from Rabbi Yeboah in the name of Rabbi Lazar. Damar prat l'shatzafu amrim l'toch sadeh chaveiro. That comes to exclude the case where they float into your friend's field. The chaveiro in, that's only true when it's in your friend's field. L'toch sadehu, but if it's in your field, lo. Gemara says, ulitamech. According to that logic, l'toch sadeh chaveiro tzafu in munachim lo, that only if they float into your friend's field and they're off the ground, is it true that it's not considered to be shechacha. Munachim lo, but if they land in your friend's field and on the ground in your friend's field, then it would be considered shechacha. Vabinan b'sadecha. Isn't the whole limud that it's in your field, not your friend's field? So it's irrespective of where it's found in your friend's field. Veleka, and you don't have that here. Ela l'toch sadeh chaveiro v'afilu munachim. It's clear here that when it goes into your friend's field, it doesn't matter if they're floating in your friend's field or on the ground in your friend's field. V'hai dekamar tzafu. So then why did he use the word tzafu? Tzafu doesn't mean that it's not on the ground now. The tzafu is describing to you how the produce got from your field to your friend's field. It's not describing to you now the way that the produce is situated. So it floated from your field to your friend's field, and then it may be in your friend's field, whether it's off the ground or on the ground. That's not really relevant. So the word tzafu over here is not used in the same way that we're asking. We're asking tzafu is where the produce remains off the ground. And you can't prove anything from that case, because there the tzafu is not about where the produce is now is, but rather how the produce got to that location. So tashma. Omer shechzik bo lo lichod ha'ir. If a person picked up a bundle to take it to the city to go sell it, v'nichol agabi chaviro, and he placed it on top of another bundle that he had there, v'shachacho, and then he forgot it. Hatachton shechacha, v'elyon eino shechacha. The top one is not considered to be shechacha, whereas the bottom one is shechacha. Neither of them are shechacha. The lower one, because it's covered, it's buried. And since it's buried, like we saw before, the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, when it's covered over, it's not considered to be shechacha. And the upper one, because it's off the ground. So now here, this would be the answer to our question as to whether when you're off the ground, it's considered to be shechacha. Over here, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, says that when it's off the ground, it's not considered to be shechacha. And even the Tanakama over here says it's only the bottom one that's shechacha. He argues about Tamun. But the Elyon, on the upper one, he says it's not shechacha because it's saf, it's off the ground. So then the consensus here is that when it's not on the ground, then it's not considered to be shechacha. And that would answer our question. And that's what the Gemara says. They only argue about the tamun aspect of the bottom bundle. Of Obelion, on the upper bundle, everybody agrees that's not considered to be forgetting when you leave it in the field. Gemara says, shiny hotam. Because since he took possession of it, he already was zocha in it. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the reason that it doesn't have a din in shechacha is not because it's off the ground, but rather because he already picked it up and started to take it to the city. Yochi, my area, Agabe Chaviro. Then the Gemara asks the obvious question, then why does it matter where he put it down? The Braita particularly mentioned that he placed it down on top of something else. Now, if the Tosefta didn't care where you put it down, then why does it specify that? Afilu b'sadeh nami, even in the field itself, you should have no din of shechacha because of the reasoning that you're giving is that he started to take it into the city. He took possession of it. So that means that once he's taken possession of it, there's no longer a din of shechacha. It says, Enochanami, you're right. That's the case. So then why does it say he placed on top of another bundle? Because it wants to teach you the din about the bottom one. Doesn't Tosefta explicitly say the reason why the upper one is not considered to be shechaz because it's off the ground? Ema, mipnei shehu kitzaf. The answer is not that it literally is tzaf, but rather it is kitzaf. It is like it's floating. Reason for this is not because it's literally off the ground, but as Rashi says, kilo ayodenu tzaf mi'al hakarka u'munach biyado. It's as if he never placed it down. That's what it means, tzaf. Tzaf means that he's carrying it around, and not that he placed it down in any specific location. And that's what the meaning of the tzaf here. The tzaf is not teaching you about it's off the ground, but rather teaching you that it's still in his hands, or is deemed as if it's in his hands, and that's why it's not a din of shechacha. Because the way that shechacha works is that if you turn your back on something, you've already passed over it, and then you only remember about it afterwards, and you have to go back to get it, then that's considered to be shechacha, and it's left in your field for the aniyim. So for instance, when you're harvesting, and you're moving along the harvest line, if you pass by something and then leave it behind you, you're not allowed to return to harvest that because that's considered to be shechacha. Same too when you have the bundles in the field. If you've collected all the bundles and you pass by a bundle that is in the field, then if you forgot about it, you're not allowed to return to get it, and that becomes shechacha. All of that has to do with the reason being shechacha, that you forgot it. If there are other reasons contributing to the shechacha, then we may not deem it shechacha. Like we saw the examples before where it's in your friend's field. The reason you forgot it is because either you didn't know about it or because it's in your friend's field. Or in a case we have here, an argument with Tamun, where it's covered over by something else. Is that considered to be shechacha? Or maybe you forgot it because it was covered over. And that's the reason for the forgetting. Or over here, where you already took possession of it and you're carrying it to the city and you just put it down, it's no longer shechacha because you've already taken possession of the item. Omar Abayi, Areni keben azai b'shukei Tveria. Abayi had a day where he was feeling very clear-minded. He was gonna be able to answer any question someone posed to him. And so he expressed that by saying that he was like Ben Azai, who he bumped into before. Ben Azai was someone who's libo chashka b'torah. He was kulo Torah. And he used to be darshaning in the public areas, shuk of Tveria, which is that he used to be able to darshan in public and have an open forum where anybody can ask him any question and he could respond. So Abaye says, I'm the equivalent of Ben Azai here in Pupudita, the way that Ben Azai was in Tveria. So there, somebody poses him a question. Amar lei, how mi rabbonon Abaye? Shnei chalalim ze al gabi ze. You have two corpses stacked on top of each other. Meichan hu modeid. Where do you do the measurement from? Min b'mino havi tamun. When it's the same item, it's still considered to be tamun. And the one on the bottom is as if it's not, because we saw before that from Ba'adama, in the Mishnah, Ba'adama velo tamun, or b'min b'mino lo vitzaf. On the other hand, when you have two of the same like items on top of each other, then they are not considered to be up, it's off the ground, and therefore would not be excluded from Basadeh velo tzaf, and not in the airspace. U'melyon modeid, and therefore in that case, the bottom corpse does not qualify for Egla Rufa, the upper corpse does, and therefore you would measure from the upper corpse. Obviously, that's the case where the two corpses are skewed in one direction or the other, so that it would be a different measurement from one versus the other. O Dilma, min b'mino habitzaf, or maybe the other way around. When it's the same item, that is considered to be off the ground, it's no longer basadeh. V'min b'mino lavitamun. On the other hand, if they're the same type, it's not considered to be buried or under the ground because you're covered by a similar item. And therefore, the bottom one would be the one that's relevant now, and you would measure from that. Or maybe min b'mino qualifies for both of these. The lower one is considered to be tamun. The upper one is considered to be off the ground. And therefore, neither of them qualify for egla rufa. And you wouldn't measure from either of them because they'd both be excluded from the mi'utim of the pasuk. Amalei tinitua. We learned this already. Omer, shechzik bolo lichol ir. The case, the Tosefta that we just brought before, that an omer which he, a bundle which he picked up to take it to the city, he put on top of another bundle and then forgot it. The bottom one is considered to be shechacha, whereas the top one is not shechacha. That's the Tanakama's position. Neither of them are shechacha. The lower one is because it's tamun. Because it's off the ground. So savrua. So the Rabbon on the Beit Midrash assumed that what Abaye meant here is that Hane Tanae Rabbi Yehuda Svirle, the Amar Besadeh Prada Tamun, both of these Tanaim here, the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yehuda, both subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, who we saw before says that Prada Tamun by Shechacha. He says the word Sadeh teaches you that something that is buried does not count towards Shechacha, or something that's covered in Shechacha. And my love, Bahaka Miflege, and therefore the Machloka between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yehuda is this, the Mar Savar Mibi Meino Havi Tamun, Mar Savar Lo Havi Tamun. And basically their only argument is whether this is deemed to be Tamun, buried or not buried. Meaning as far as the Tamun is concerned, it definitely would be exempt from Shechacha. The only question here is it Tamun or not Tamun? And that Machloka revolves around whether when the item is similar to the item below it, is that considered to be Tamun or not Tamun? And that would be the answer, in essence, to the question that was posed to Abaye. It's a machloki between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Bar Yehuda as to whether when you have min b'mino, it's deemed to be tamun. In addition to that, as Rashi notes over here, aval tzaf, lo pasha lo mino. As regards to the upper item, they would have no conclusion from this as to what the status of the upper item is over here. Even though the upper one is considered to be ois shechacha, not shechacha, according to both opinions here, but the Gemara already established that the reason for that was because he was machzik ala derech, that he picked it up to take it to the shuk, and therefore it became his. The reason was not because it's in the avir, but rather because he took it to the shuk. If you don't assume the Gemara's conclusion, and you say that the reason for the upper one also is mipnei shehu tzaf, because it is floating, that means that both opinions agree that the elyon is not shechacha, and then that would answer the other question as well, which is min b'mino, does have a din of tzafa, just like it does by shechacha. As Rashi notes over here, because the Gemara already concluded that that was not the reason for the Tosefta, therefore we would not conclude anything from this, or Abaye was not trying to bring a proof with regards to Tzafa, only with regards to Tamun. Lo, ik Rabbi Yehuda svirlu, if they held like Rabbi Yehuda, dekulo yama min bimino havi Tamun. If they did hold like Rabbi Yehuda, everybody would agree that even if it's the like kind or same item on top of each other, the lower one is considered to be buried, not visible, and Tamun. V'hacha b'plukta Rabbi Yehuda rabbonan kamiflegei. No, the machloket here in the Tosefta is whether Tamun is really exempt from Shechacha or not. The Rabbonon ki Rabbonon, the Tanakama holds like the Rabbonon that there is no din of Tamun by Shechacha, because Basadeh comes to tell you that even Tamun has a din of Shechacha. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda ki Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Tamun is. So they're not arguing. Everybody agrees that min b'mino is not the issue here. The question is Tamun effective by Shechacha, or is it exempted by Shechacha? So Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Tamun does not subject to Shechacha. Whereas the Tanakama here holds like the Rabbonon that says that Tamun is subject to Shechacha, and that's the Machloket. It says, Yehochi Ma'iria al-Gabi Chaviro. If that's the case, then why is the specific case here one stacked on top of the other? Afilu ba'afaru ubitzror nami. Their Machloket could have been equally about a case where it's buried in the ground under a pile of rocks or stones or pebbles. It says, Enochanami. You're right, that could have been the case here. So then why didn't the Tosefta make that the case? To teach you the strength of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Damar afil min b'mino havi tamun. To tell you that not only in a case where it's buried in the ground is it considered to be tamun and exempt from shechacha, even if it's stacked with like-kind items on top of each other, Rabbi Yehuda thinks that's still considered to be tamun and it's exempt from shechacha. Tarabanan. So now the Gemara here goes back to discussing the exemptions for the case of Egla Rufa, when the procedure does not have to be done. The Mishnah already gave us a number of those exemptions, and here the Braita that we bring now brings you additional exemptions, which is Chalau. Now Rashi over here says to us that the word Chalau means Lo Mikri Ela Bikli Barzel Kein Cherev. A Chalau is only something that is killed, or corpse that was killed by a metallic weapon like a sword. So that's the way that Rashi learns it. Others learn that halal is only defined as a corpse that died because of the loss of blood. Still others think that a halal is something where it's obvious that the individual was killed, not a possibility that they died from something that either was self-inflicted or some sort of sickness that caused them to die. So the Gemara says here, chalal velo chanuk. Therefore, the Gemara concludes that it has to be a corpse and not someone who choked. So for all those reasons we mentioned before, according to Rashi, choke is not subject to a kli barzel. It was an individual who was killed by a metallic weapon. Those that say you have to let blood, no bloodletting in the choking process, and therefore it's not considered to be a chalal. Or the possibility is that the person choked and it wasn't imposed from the outside. It didn't happen because someone else choked him. That's a chalal velo chanuk. Chalal velo mitparper. Also, it has to be a corpse and not someone who's still alive, still bouncing around or moving, meaning that the corpse is still moving, even though the person might be on the edge or the precipice of death, but he's still moving around. So obviously, while he's moving around, he's not dead, so there's nothing to deal with in terms of aglar ufa. But if you come back afterwards and the person is not there, then you can assume that maybe he lived by nais, and you don't have to assume that he died. Now, if he dies, then you would have to carry out the procedure of aglar ufa, because then he would no longer be mitparper. Badama, velo tamun begal. Badama, velo tamun begal. We already saw in our Mishnah that it's in the ground and not buried under another pile of something. No fell. That he was struck and fell. Velo talui beinan, and not hanging from a tree. Basadeh, velo tzafal pnei amayim. And then in the field and not floating on the water. So these latter three we have mentioned in our Mishnah as well. Rabbelezer omer, bukulam, imaya halal orfin. He says, in all of these cases, if he's considered to be a halal, then we do arifa, we do the procedure of eglar ufa. So what Rabbi Elazar and Ensis is saying is that the word halal is more expansive in its meaning, and it would include all of these cases. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Ulo, the Rabbi Elazar, Yata modeh, Shema yechanuk, umutal bashba, shein orfim. If you find him choked, asphyxiated in the garbage heap, that you don't do an eglar ufa for it, Alma, halal velo chanuk. It seems that he definitely darshins that drasha of a halal and not someone who is choked. Gemara says, if that's the case, Hachanami, why don't you say, Badama velo tamun bagal, no fel velo talui bi'ilan, besadeh velo tzaf al gabi amayim? My answer is, Rabbi Elazar, chalal yeter aktiv. In the parshia of Egla Rufa, the word chalal is used numerous times, and since it's used so many times, there are a lot of extraneous words, chalal. Because of the extraneous word chalal, he's able to darshan chalal velo chanuk. But with regards to the other items, he feels that they're written there for the normal explanation of the case and not for specifically mudim to come and be mayate something else. Nipsa samuklas far, or the irsh ruba of dekochavim, if the corpse was found near the border or near a city that was majority of dekochavim, why did we know that that case is not a case of eglar ufak? Dichtiv, it says, kimatse prada matsui. It has to be something where you happen across it, you just find it, but not something that's normally found. Meaning that the expectation is if a person puts himself into these dangerous situations where it's likely that they will get murdered, then this is not something unusual to find there. Kiyamatse indicates you just happened across it. It was something unusual that happened. So Prada Matsui means that on the border, it's a dangerous place. People are walking on the border, many times get killed. So that's not called Kiyamatse. And the same thing while passing by in Irish Ruba Ovde Kokavim. Ovde Irish Inba Beitin, we discussed this in the Mishnah, a city that does not have a Beitin in it. Debina Ziknair Veleka. The reason for that is because the Parshia of Egla Rufa says, V'lachu Ziknair Ahi Egla Tabakar. So without Ziknaim of the city, you can't perform the Egla Rufa, and that's missing over here. And in Modedim El Ir, you only measure to a city that has a Beitin in it. Pshita, you already told us, Kevin Dazana, the Ir Shemba Beitin, Anayadana, Dein Modedim. If you told us already that a city does not bring an Egla Rufa when it doesn't have a Ziknair, and of course, you're not going to measure to that city because it'll have no relevance. Elo the ir sheish ba beitin. Of course, you're only going to measure to a city that has a beitin in it. But it says, HaKamashman, it comes to teach us, Kedetanyo. We have an abraita. Miayin shim nimsa samuch the ir shein ba beitin. If it's closer to a city that does not have a beitin in it, sheminichonota. We don't count to that city or measure to that city. Umodudim the ir sheish ba beitin. And then you measure to a city that does have a beitin. Tamalomar v'lachu ziknei ha'ir ahi mikol makom. As Rashi notes over here, the ziknei ha'ir there is extraneous because ziknei ha'ir were already mentioned before, and therefore you could use the pronoun here instead of ziknei ha'ir. The fact that the Torah repeated ziknei ha'ir teaches us that mikol makom, you still measure to the city with a beit din in it. Rashi claims that the hava mina over here would have been that if you don't have a beit din in the city, that city would still have to pay for the eglar rufa and bring the eglar rufa. It just would be brought by the nearest city that has a Beit Din in it. But they would be responsible for the Egla Arufa, the city that was closer. So the Kamash Malan is, no, that they are not responsible. It's the city that has the Beit Din in it that is responsible. We measure to that city and make them the responsible parties. Again, as we discussed the Mishnah, there's a possibility that there would be no obligation in that case, which is when closest city is a city without a Beit Din in it, then maybe nobody is Chayav in that case, because remember we mentioned the Mishnah at the bottom of today's Amud is going to say the same thing, which is that the Ziknei Ha'ir are saying that we didn't do anything wrong over here. But they have to be a Ziknei Ha'ir, which set a certain precedent and guidance for the city. If the city doesn't have that guidance, then maybe we can't expect more from this city. In addition to that, a city without a Beit Din in it, maybe is not considered to be a city. It's considered to be a suburb of the other cities that do have a Beit Din in it. Therefore, maybe there is no Egel Ruf in that case. The Kamash Malan is that you still measure. You just skip over that city, and you measure to the closest place with a Beit Din in it. The next Mishnah says, Nimtza Mikuvan Ben Shtei Ayarot, if it was exactly equidistant between two cities. Shtehem Meviot Shtei Eglot Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. They bring two Eglot Arufot. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Ve'en Yushalayim Mevia Egla Arufa. Yushalayim does not bring an Egla Arufa. Again, all of these items are going to be explained in the Gemara as to why that's the case. Nimsa Rosho B'Makom Echad V'Gufo B'Makom Echad. If his head was severed from his body, so the head is in one place and the body is somewhere else, Molichin Arosh Itzel Aguf. Then you bring the head to the body, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Rabbi Kiva says the other way around, Haguf Itzel Arosh. You bring the body back to where the head is. Me'ayin Ayu Modudin. From which part of the body do you measure the corpse to the closest city? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mitiburo. You do it from the belly button, from the center of the body, or from where Rabbi Eliezer believes the body is created. Kiva Omer Mechotmo, that you do it from his nose. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov Omer Mimakom Shenaseh Chalau Mitzavaro. From the location that he was made into a corpse, and that's from his neck. This might relate to what we spoke about before, that Chalau was defined as somebody who was killed through a weapon or a metallic weapon, and therefore, in all likelihood, it was by the neck. But we'll see that the Gemara brings a pasuk to support that understanding. It says, "My time with Rabbi Eliezer." What is Rabbi Eliezer's reasoning? Kasavar efshar letzamtzem. Rabbi Eliezer believes that you can get to an exactitude that makes it perfectly equidistant between the two cities. Mikrova vafilu krovot. And he darshins in the pasuk when it says the word krova, that the city that is closest, even though it's written in the singular, which is vayayir akrovay lachalau. He still says that krova doesn't always mean singular, it can mean krovot. Rashi over here brings examples of the fact that the Torah many times uses the singular, even though it means plural. And so he believes, first of all, you can be mitzamtzem. You can't have exact measurement. And number two is he says the word krova is lav dafka, and means even krovot that two cities bring it. Rashi says the reason the Gemara concluded this is because you can't say that Rabbi Eliezer believes it's a safek. If it's a safek, and that's why both cities bring it. Because if it's a safek and both cities bring it, you would only bring one egla rufa, and then two cities would share in the cost of the Egla Rufa, and then make a tnai between them as to whomever is chayav to bring the Egla Rufa, this Egla Rufa is for them. The fact that Rabbi Eliezer requires you to bring each city to bring their own Egla Rufa and do their own procedure shows you that he believes that they're both chayavim. And that's why the Gemara concludes that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is efshar letzamtzem. It is possible to get to an exactitude in human measurements. And because of that, we then say that it is the two cities that are chayavim here. If it was the fact that we believe that it's impossible to get exact measurements, but humanly we can't figure out which one is closer, then you have a safek. And the safek would have resulted in one eglot arufa, not two eglot arufot. This issue of the tzamtzem, Tosafot, in many places in Shas, discusses that the Gemara seems to have different opinions about efshar letzamtzem, and Tosafot really pushes the idea that their efshar letzamtzem makes a difference in whether it's human or it's bidei shamayim. That when something is done bidei shamayim, then efshar letzamtzem, it's never going to be at the exact time. It's just that we are unable to discern which happened first and which happened second. On the other hand, if it's a human being that's doing it and making something exactly equidistant, then there is a possibility of efshar letzamtzem. And that's how Tosafot reconciles many of these disparate opinions in Shas of saying whether it is possible to be exact or not. Depends on whether we're talking about bidei shamayim, where it's impossible that it's exact. We just as human beings are unable to discern which one is first or second or which one's closer or not, versus human measurements or human creations where it's possible that it's the same. Ve'inu shalayim evia egla rufa. Shalayim does not bring an egla rufa. Damakra l'rishta. Because the pasuk in describing the egla rufa says, ki metzei chalav adamai shoshem lokech noten lechal l'rishta. It's found on your land that you inherited. And the Bala Mishnah here believes that Yerushalayim was not divided up amongst the Shvatim. It's a machlok in the Gemara Megillah and other places as to whether Yerushalayim was given to Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin, or whether it was basically a national city by which all the Shvatim held ownership in it, or basically there was no Shevet that had particular ownership in the city. So if you hold that there's no particular ownership, then it's not Lerishta. That's the view of our author, our Mishnah. I mentioned before in the Amud Aleph that the other opinion who says that the Sanhedrin was out around Yerushalayim because of Negla Rufa must be the other opinion that holds that Yerushalayim was Mitkal Kadosh Vatim, and therefore there was a possibility of a Negla Rufa in that case in Yerushalayim. Nimsa Rosho Bimakom. Now here, the Mishnah said that if the head and the body are separated, what do we do in that case? But my Kamiflagate, what's the argument here between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer? They're arguing about where you measure from. Do you measure from the head, or do you measure from the body when you find them in different locations? But in the latter half of the Mishnah says, that where do you measure from, that's indicative of the fact that until that point, they were not speaking about that topic. It means that the earlier part of the Mishnah clearly wasn't talking about measurement. They're arguing about the concept that a make mitzvah, wherever he dies, is kone makom, and you bury him on the spot. So if you bury him on the spot, which is the spot that he gets? Does he get the spot where his head is? Or does he get the spot where his body is? In order to bury him, kana mikomo, he acquires that location. The Lezer says that the body is the thing that is kone the kvura, and then the head is brought to the body to bury it there. You bring the body to the head. So then what is the ikaron? What is the key element of their machloket that makes them different opinion here? So Rabbi Eliezer believes that the body fell where he was killed, and the head, which was severed, rolled away because it's smaller, it's rounder, and therefore it rolled away from the body. And that's where it ended up. So therefore the body is the real location where he died or he was killed. The other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes that wherever the head was severed, that's where it fell. Gufohu the right vizil, but as we know, like the psikreshe of the chicken, that if an individual was running or moving, even if their head was severed, they would continue to move in that direction. And therefore the head fell exactly where it was severed, but the body continued to run onwards because of the nervous system still getting those messages at the last moment, and it continued on, and therefore the head is the determining location. From what part of the body do they measure from? Again, here we have three different opinions. What's their machloket? One of them, Rabbi Akiva, holds that the major life force of the individual is through his nose, and therefore that is the primary location. If he died, the place that he died from is from the lack of oxygen or breathing, and therefore the nose is the proper location to measure from. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer believes that the life force of the individual comes from his belly button, or really from the center of his body, or from where the internal organs are. Let us say that this machloket, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer, is parallel to another machloket. From where is a fetus created? Mirosho. It's from his head. And as it says, Mimei imi ata gozi, that from the womb of my mother, you plucked me out, you withdrew me. Bomer, and we have an additional pasuk that says, Gozi nizrech vashlichi, that you should tear out your hair and throw it away. But you see the word gazi is used with regards to the head. And therefore, mimeimi ata gozi, that you plucked me out, is also, so the head is the thing that is the center or the beginning of the formation of the vlad. Abishol omer mitu buron. Abishol argues and says, no, it's from the belly button, from the umbilical cord. And then the body develops from that central point outwards. Mara says, no, afilu tema abashol. Even according to abashol, both Tanaim here could argue. Ad kan lo kamar abashol elinyan yitzira. Abashol is only talking about how the baby or how the fetus is formed. Techi mitzar vlad mi mitziyate mitzar. If it's created, it's created from the umbilical cord outwards. Aval inyan chiyuta dukuliyama ba'apehu. But with regards to life force, or the central life force of the individual, that's from his nose, that's from his breathing. As the Torah describes, that any living being is but nishmat ruach chaim, that breathes. And so breathing is the central life force of the individual, and that doesn't matter how they're created, but once they're alive, That's the key element of what keeps them alive. And the cessation of that is when they die. And that cessation is where you're going to measure from, because that's what makes them into a halal. That's what makes them into a corpse. This has some impact in terms of determination of time of death, because over here you see this concept. Again, it's played out in other places in the Gemara in more detail. But here you see that the nose or the breathing is the key element of life. And therefore, the cessation of breathing is what's the determining factor in terms of death. And so then, according to those opinions that believe that the cessation of life or death is when the person stops breathing, and that would be the determining threshold by which a person is declared dead, and not necessarily brainstem death. Obviously, there are other opinions with regards to this. There is a different view within Rabbi Akiva and Yerushalmi, which comes from another issue that we discussed in Yevamot, which is the ability to identify a corpse. And we said before that the nose is a central part of the face, and that a face without a nose on it does not have a status of being able to be identified, because it changes the surat panim. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva says you do it from the nose, because that's the key aspect of the facial features that allow you to identify the corpse. And that's why you measure from the nose, not because it's the life force of the individual, but rather because that's the identifying feature of the individual. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer mi makom shenaseh halal mitzavaro. My time with the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. What's the reason behind Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? Hidichtiv. Atei totach el tzavarei halalei rishayim. To take you to the necks of the corpses of these rishayim. So you see here that there's a correlation between the tzavar, the neck, and the halal. And so therefore a halal is defined by neck. And that's why he says that you measure from the neck, because that's the definition of a halal. And again, similar maybe to what we saw earlier about this idea that halal involves a metallic weapon or the killing through the severing of the neck. Okay, next Mishnah. Nifteru ziknei Yerushalayim. The Sanhedrin HaGdolah goes back. Their job is only to measure which city is responsible for the corpse and they bring the Egel HaRufah. Once they've done their job, they go back home. V'halchulen ziknei oto ha'ir. Then the zikenim of that particular city may be an eglat bakar. They bring an eglat bakar, which egla is called up to 2 years, is considered to be a calf. Asher lo mashcha ba'ol, that never did any work, that was never put in a yoke to plow or to move anything. Veinam mum poselba. Doesn't matter if it has a blemish, that's not an issue for this egla rufa. Morino tala nachal etan. As the psukim say, then you take it down. Boridu aziknei yerai et eglail nachal etan. They take it down to an etan. Etan kemashmo, kashe. Etan means something hard and difficult. I mean, it's an infertile place, somewhere where there's no water running. That's what it means, etan. Etan means hard and difficult, usually a rocky area. Afo pi sheino etan kasher. It's not a cave. That's a chatchila. It should be this way. But even if you take it down to the nachal, it's not an area that's etan, it's still good enough to be yotzev this din of egla rufa. For fimo ta bekupitz me'achorea, then you chop its head off of this calf from behind the neck with the kupitz, which is usually considered to be a hatchet. Rashi over here says it's sakin gedola. It's a large knife. Umekoma asur milizroa umleavod. The area where you do this procedure of the egla rufa, you're not allowed to plant there, and you can't work that land. That land, which was infertile before, should remain infertile. It should not be used. Again, these are all simanim to what had happened there with regards to this corpse. And the Gemara will discuss all of these symbols that are being mentioned here. Mutar lisrok sham pishtan. You're allowed there to comb flax in that area. Or lenaker sham avanim. Or to drill holes in rocks. Or do work that is on the surface. The only restriction there is to do work of the land itself. It's not to use the location in particular. Ziknei otayir rochatzim et yudem b'mayim. Then the zikinim of that city wash their hands with water. V'makom arefa shelegla. The place where the head or the neck of the calf was severed. V'omri. And then they say what is prescribed in the psukim. Which is, v'oridu chol ziknei ha'ir ha'i ha'krovim el ha'chalal yechatzu et yudem ala egla ha'rufa b'nachal v'anu v'amru. And then they say, yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh. We did not spill this blood. Ve'einenu lo ra'u. And we didn't see it. And then, this is the Gemara that we quoted earlier back on Daf Lamed Chet. V'chi ala detenu al ziknei beitin shofchei damim heim. Well, we're suspicious that these zikenim, these people, members of the Sanhedrin, were the ones who killed this individual. Ella. Shalom ba'al yadeinu patronu. He didn't come to our hands and we released him. You can see that they take out below mazon, because that was the addition of the Gemara back on Lamed Chet. What does it mean, below Petronua? That means that we didn't release him, let him go without giving him tzedal aderech, without giving him provisions to go on the way, as Rashi notes here, in the way that he did before, because If we didn't give him food, then he had to attack others in order to get his food, and that might be what resulted in his death. And we didn't see him and let him go. And again, they take out from the Mishnah below the Viav, because that's the addition of the Gemara. What does it mean that we didn't see him and let him go? That we didn't let him go without an accompaniment, so that he wasn't protected and he couldn't be attacked by others. And then the Kohanim say, because the Kohanim were there, it says, Vikshua Kohanim b'nei Levi, that they're a part of this procedure. And they say, Kaper la'amecho Yisrael asher padita, that you should bring kapara to your nation Israel asher padita Hashem, v'al titein namki b'tkerv amcha Yisrael. And then this clean blood should not be brought onto Klal Yisrael, meaning that we should not be held responsible for what's done here, because we didn't know about it, and we had no way to stop it. And therefore we are saying that we don't know, we're exempt from this, we are not guilty of this death, because we were not the cause of this death. V'nichaper lahem hadam. And then the pasuk concludes with v'nichaper lahem hadam, and the Mishnah says over here, lo yetzruchin lamar v'nichaper lahem hadam. Even though that's found in the pasuk, that's not part of what the Kohanim say. El ruach hakodesh mivasartam eimatai shetasu kacha hadam mitkaper lahem. Rather, that's like a bat kol, or that's the Torah making the promise, that if you do this procedure, v'nichaper lahem hadam, then you will not be held responsible for the blood that was spilled here. So that's rather a narrative about what will happen or the result of this procedure, not a part of what the Kohanim themselves have to say. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Mem Vav, Amud Aleph.